Welcome to Orphans No More, a media extension of Justice for Orphans, a ministry dedicated to rally the church for the cause of the fatherless, inspiring, educating, and equipping believers to care for vulnerable children, and supporting those who have heard and heeded the call of James 1:27. Here's your host, Sandra Flack.
And we know that in all things, God works for good for those who love him, who are called according to his purpose. That is Romans 8:28. Hi there, I am Sandra Flack. Welcome to episode number 220 of our Orphans No More podcast. We are trusting God to work all things together for good, including this global and national pandemic. We're recording this show during the coronavirus shutdown. It's May. My kids and I have begun our 9th week of homeschooling during this shelter-in-place thing here in upstate New York. We're surviving, but I am recording from home, so if you hear kids yelling or a dog barking or any kind of craziness, it's life and we're just being real, and I'm sure that you can relate to that at this point. Thank you so much for taking the time out to join us today. I hope you're navigating all the challenges caused by COVID-19. As believers, it's important for us to keep our eyes on the Lord and trust him to work these things out for good. But we also have to take an active part in this with him. We have to rise up and do our part. We must actively engage in life to make a difference in our own circumstances, and a difference in the lives of others around us. And our guest today has done just that. Carrie Ralph is a social worker in Rensselaer County. She co-pastors Rhema Revealed Ministries in Troy, New York, with her husband, Justin, Pastor Justin, and she's founder of Anchor Life LLC, a personal and professional development business, and she is a former foster youth. Wow. Welcome to the show, Carrie.
Thanks, Sandra. It's really good to be here. I'm so honored to be able to participate.
I'm honored to have you on the show. I know I can't even remember how we initially connected many years ago. Somehow we crossed paths, and I've been wanting you on the show ever since. I know in the beginning you were really busy. I think you were finishing up your master's, and we just kind of lost contact a little bit there, but we've reconnected, and May is National Foster Care Month, so I'm thrilled to have you on the guest this week. So you have such an inspirational story. Let's start at the beginning. You entered foster care at around age 9. What do you remember from that time? What can you tell us?
Yes, so that's correct. I did go into foster care around 9, me and my 3 younger siblings. I have 2 younger brothers and a younger sister. Shout out to you guys. And I just remember coming home from school one day, and my mom wasn't there, and a social worker came to the house, and my younger sister's godmother also had come to the house, and I just remember them telling us to pack some bags, and that we were leaving the house for a while. I mean, we were really young, didn't really know what was going on, but I do remember is that I know my mom had a habit of leaving for a few days and going in and out, but usually she'd make plans for us. And this time it was just different. It seemed like something more emergent was going on. And I do recall someone telling us that she was in the hospital. So that's really all that they told us at that time. So we packed a few things and we went to an agency, I believe. It was kind of like a holding room. I just remember this big room with a bunch of kids in the room, and it seemed like we were just there waiting for placement. I was in Brooklyn, New York at the time, so if you can imagine just the population, I know things are a little bit different down there than they are up here in terms of kids coming into care, but it was just this big holding room, and eventually my sister and I got placed in one place, and my 2 brothers got placed together. Thankfully, we did have some resources in our church that were able to step up and get certified to become foster parents. And so one of them actually was already a foster parent in the church, and then the other couple got certified over time. And so we were able to have some continuity with our community, with our friends, with our, our resources. And so that was good while it lasted. Eventually, over time, we ended up getting split up even more. My two brothers got split up, and my sister and I got split up after a failed placement of 5 years together. So she did stay with that family, and ultimately I went on to another family, and by that time I was 17 years old in my senior year of high school. So it was just a big transition. And I don't know if anybody can imagine what it's like, but, you know, being somewhere for 5 years, being in a pre-adoptive home, thinking that you're going to get adopted, that you're going to have your forever family, and then this disruption happens. And then, you know, to this day, I don't have all of the understanding of why it failed even, but to transition at a point where I should be preparing to graduate from high school, preparing for adulthood, you know, becoming independent, it was just kind of, it definitely was an emotional setback, but I didn't allow it to stop me from pursuing, you know, the rest of my goals. And so, you know, that's kind of it in a nutshell. My mom, she struggled with substance abuse for a very long time. And until recently, last year, I actually requested my foster care records so that I can get more information, because, you know, as you get older, it becomes a blur. And so you just know you're in the system, you know you're in and out of homes. And I think throughout my time in foster care, I was in 4 or 5 different placements, you know, with the one being 5 years lasting the longest. And so I got my records, and I thought I went into care solely based on her substance abuse, but really it was more of her mental health. And I think she just reached a low place in life where, you know, she had disclosed during a counseling session that she was intending on killing herself and her children, me and my 3 siblings. And so that's what ultimately led to our placement. Throughout our time in care, you know, the agency did try to, you know, keep that relationship between my mom and I and my siblings, but over time she just stopped showing up and eventually terminated her rights because she realized it was something that she couldn't do. Ultimately, I'm grateful for that, because had she tried to get us back and had not reached her own place of wholeness and healing, things could have been a lot worse. And so where a lot of people look at the foster care system as, you know, the worst thing that can happen, for some of us, it literally saves our life and it gives us opportunities that we would not have had otherwise. So, you know, to this day, I'm grateful. And I look back on my experiences, and they weren't easy, but in hindsight, they helped to build me to be in the person that I am today. So, you know, I have no other choice but to be grateful for it.
What an amazing perspective that you have there. I couldn't help but noticing in your story, you were separated from your siblings. You weren't all 4 able to stay together. That had to be incredibly difficult.
Yeah, it was. I remember the day I was packing up to leave, and, you know, I looked at my sister and I was like, you know, let's go. Why are you not packing yourself? You know, yeah. And it was kind of this response of, you know, I'm not leaving, you know, because, you know, and she's the youngest sibling at that point. So she doesn't really have, you know, the same recollection of certain events. And I can imagine by that point, she was just tired. You know, it was hard. You know, she definitely had some other challenges and had some institutional placements, as well as one of my other brothers. And so, you know, certainly for them, they moved around a lot more than I did. And so I can imagine you reach that point where you're just tired and you're like, you know, you find a place, maybe it's not the best place, but you feel some kind of stability and you want to hold on to that. So that was one of the hardest things that I had to do as an older sibling, was to just realized that, you know, I can't be the savior. I can't save them, you know, especially as a child. I'm a child. You know, I need help. I need saving. I need someone to be there for me. And for so long, being the oldest sibling, you kind of carry that burden of what happens to the rest of your family. Yeah. And, you know, you have this like survivor's guilt, like, you know, how can I move forward if I can't bring them with me? But at some point I had to realize that I can't do anything for them if I can't do it for me, you know, yeah. If I can't be my best. It's like pouring out of an empty glass, nothing's gonna come out. So, you know, that was one of the hardest things I did have to do. And for a period of time, my siblings and I were disconnected. You know, we weren't in contact for a long time. And, you know, I'm grateful for social media and technology and the advances that it's had, because for me, it really was one of the main resources that I had to reconnect with them as I got older. You know, I could find them on Facebook. I could talk to them on Facebook. And it didn't matter if they had a cell phone or if somebody controlled who they spoke to or not. I can have direct contact with them. And so, you know, technology definitely has been a help in terms of, you know, reuniting with certain family members.
That is wonderful to know. I calculated you spent about 8 years in foster care. Mm-hmm. Five of those you said was with one family that was supposed to end up in adoption, mm-hmm. and that was disrupted. And then it was your senior year in high school. So you had to go live with another family. And then you went on to college. And statistically, most foster youth do not go to college. What made a difference for you?
So school was kind of always a saving grace for me, so to speak. I didn't have to be, you know, the kid in foster care. And I mentioned earlier that, you know, we did have some continuity with our natural community because some people did step up. And as I got older, I had my own choice of whether I went to church or not, you know. And I did have other foster parents that went to church and I would go with them at times, but for the most part, because I was a teenager, I could travel to go where I wanted. And so I did have that continuity, but with that also came the identity of being a kid taken away from their family. You know, I was even still no more just Carrie. It's wow, you know, she's in foster care now and people knew that. And so school was one places that I can go and just be Carrie, just be me. And so, you know, I always excelled in school. And thankfully, before being removed from my mom, you know, she kind of set a standard. She was an educated person. She went to college. You know, she wasn't the typical person that you see losing their kids. And that, you know, that kind of takes away the stigma. You know, it's not just bad moms and bad dads that lose their kids. It's people that reach challenges or illnesses or situations out of their control. And yes, she has some control in her recovery, but we know it's an illness. And so that's something that, you know, she was struggling with at that time. She was very educated. She had good jobs. She lived a good life. She was raised in the church. She did ministry as well and just reached a point of unfortunate circumstances that brought us here today. But she kind of set a standard for education in our house. You know, we lived in Long Island and Glen Cove, Long Island at one point. And I don't know if anybody knows the geographic outlook of New York or Long Island, but that was a well-off community. And, you know, I think it's Suffolk County, if I'm not mistaken, you know, we were one of the few minority families there. And so she was able to even provide, you know, what seemed like a greater, you know, life for us than some of our other counterparts at one point. And so she always set a standard for school. We'd come home, we'd change our clothes. She was big on no outside clothes in the house, and we'd do homework. And she would not let us get up until the homework was done. And she really invested in us in education. And I enjoyed school. I enjoyed learning, even to this day. If I could be a professional learner and not work and just stay in school, I would be. But, you know, that's not my reality. So she did set that standard for us. And then in school, I was just grateful to have a lot of caring adults and faculty, especially in high school. You know, two faculty members, and one of them I had the privilege of being a student of in an English class, they really invested in me and my peers. You know, I didn't have a large network of friends in school. I had, you know, three main ones and that's it. You know, that's all I needed. And we had similar goals, similar interests, and we just had a great dynamic of a relationship, but we were all focused on, you know, getting out of the circumstances we were in and being better. And so my peer network definitely was an asset to me, you know, staying motivated enough to go to college and recognizing that I could, that, you know, the label of foster care doesn't mean that I can't go. It doesn't mean that I can't achieve my goals and that I can't be what I wanted to be. And then just having those, you know, faculty members, those staff, those educators invest a little bit more in me, you know, more attention. Our incoming class in Brooklyn was about 900 students. 900 students can't say that they received the level of attention and support that I know I received from, you know, these people. And so it kept me motivated. And, you know, that's the power of a caring adult in your life. Like, it can just keep pushing you and it gives you that momentum to just keep moving forward. And so I was fortunate fortunate enough to have that in high school. Also, my social worker was amazing. She was very invested in me. Her supervisor, very invested, you know, but my prom dress. Even when I graduated from college, my social worker came to my college graduation. By that time, I had aged out of foster care already, but still had a relationship with her enough to the point where she and, you know, the last foster parent I had that I moved into as a senior, they traveled together to come to my college graduation for undergraduate. And so I was fortunate enough to have a lot of supportive adults in my life despite the circumstances. And it helped me realize that I wanted to go into the helping professions, the social work profession, and to be able to be that person, that resource for other kids in care. And so, you know, thankfully I was able to stay true to that. I was able to go to UAlbany, shout out to University of Albany, and I was able to, you know, graduate with my bachelor's in sociology and my bachelor's in sociology with a minor in psychology. And then I went on to Liberty University, where I did my master's in human services counseling with a concentration in family and marriage. And I chose Liberty University after I had started UAlbany for their social work program, but I wanted something different. I chose Liberty University because my faith is a big part of why I'm here today. You know, I'm a Christian, sold out believer, believe in God. You know, I make no regrets or bones about that. And so I love the fact that at Liberty University, being a Christian university, it integrated faith and Christianity into all of these different disciplines. And so, you know, I got to learn and get the same quality of education, but from a perspective that was true and meaningful and real to me. And so it even changed my outlook on how I look at these disciplines and these professions. I don't just see myself as someone who has a career helping people. I see myself as someone who has a purpose, who has a mission to help people, realizing that I am just an extension of God's grace, his hands and feet in the earth to bring change, healing, restoration, wholeness, and deliverance to all. So, you know, I'm just living on my purpose. You know, the Bible tells us that we are to, you know, take care of the orphans, the widows, you know, the homeless, the hungry. And so that's just my purpose. And so being able to go to a school that recognizes that and is able to infuse it into what we learn and the secular aspect and giving us the skills and the tools, I can now take faith and passion and marry it with skill and discipline and education and be even more impactful. So, you know, I just, you know, I'm so grateful for that. And so I do believe that it was my mom that set that standard, but all of the support that I had throughout my years as, you know, a young person going through foster care, it was able to help me reach that goal and continue to identify what my purpose was.
I love it. You got your preach on there for a little bit. That was I love that. And another former foster youth and motivational speaker, a gentleman by the name of Josh Shipp, he has said, this is a quote from him, I heard him speak at a conference several years ago, and he said, every kid is just one caring adult away from success. And clearly in your story, that has been the case.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm fortunate enough to have had many caring adults. And so I often say, and I remember saying this to some of my friends, because there was a point in my life where, you know, I was jealous of, you know, those around me that had their moms and, you know, had their dads. And for me, you know, we went into foster care with our father being unidentified. So I never until last year knew who my father was. And so until last year, and again, I'll say thank God for technology, because I actually found him doing the ancestry kit. That's how I found my biological father. This whole time, I thought my father had been deceased, because that's the story that my mom told us. I knew my siblings and I had different parents, different fathers. And so I remember I threw my husband a birthday party, and I bought ancestry kits to raffle off at the party. And we were having so much fun that I forgot to do the raffle. And so at the end of it, I was just like, you know what, I'm just going to take that kit. And to make a long story short, you know, I connected and matched with who is my uncle, my father's brother, and he was able to connect me with my father. And so even, you know, growing up my whole life thinking that I didn't have a father, I did. And, you know, My mom actually passed away a few years ago, and May 17th is the anniversary of that. And so I remember around the time we were scheduled to do our first podcast, it was around the time where I was graduating with my master's, and then my mom passed away that same month. And I was like, I'm just so overwhelmed. And so that's kind of how we didn't get this done the first time. Okay. But I'm just grateful because, you know, I felt like I lost one parent, but, you know, in the midst of it all, God's plan is still sovereign and perfect. And now I have another parent that I can get to know and build that relationship with. But I don't know that I even would have been at the place to receive that if it wasn't for the supportive adults that are just like, Carrie, you know what, you can do this. You're stronger than this. You've got this. And so I had so many supportive adults. I remember saying to some of my friends, you know, because I was jealous about they had their moms and I didn't. And I would say, as someone who's motherless, I have so many mother figures in my life. I have just stepped up and have been there, you know, in some kind of way to support me through that process. And, you know, there are too many to name names on this podcast, but, you know, if you're listening, you know who you are. You know, you've stepped up and you really supported me in that way. And I'm grateful for that. And it truly makes all of the difference. It makes all of the difference.
Yeah. So you had teachers, you had some, you were able to stay connected with your church that you had grown up in. Important part of your story, your social workers. Along the way, what helped you remain steadfast in your faith? Because a lot of times kids who come from hard places, they don't trust God, and they really don't believe that God really could care about them because of what has happened to them. So how have you been able to remain steadfast in your faith?
Right. I look back at my life and I realized that I should have been a different outcome. And I know that I didn't control that. And I know that no one else could have gotten me to this place. And so it had to be God. And so as I got older, you know, I had to build a relationship with God for myself. I grew up in the church. I mentioned that before. I don't ever remember a point in my life where I did not go to church. You know, I believe, you know, my family was a part of a founding of a congregation, you know, at some point. So I've always been in church. At a certain age, you know, in my teenage years, I had to have a conviction of my faith and make a decision as to if I believed for myself or if I did not believe. And, you know, I had to, you know, God, if you're real, please show up in this way. Please, you know, lead me, cover me. And as I, you know, grew up and grew older, he really showed himself in my life to help me realize that there's nothing that, you know, I could do without him. I remember being in college and just getting random checks in the mail. I'm just like, God, this is you. I don't know where this check came from. And, you know, somebody else could have just said, okay, well, whatever. But I know that he's my provider. And I know that he said he would supply all my needs. And so any increase that I got, I knew it was him. You know, especially it would be at the most on-time moments. I would be like, I don't know how I'm going to get these books, or I don't know what I'm going to do for the next few weeks. And, you know, bam, something happens. And I'm just like, okay, God, you knew that. Or I would have these prayers about things that I wanted to see in my life, things that I may not have even talked about to anyone else. And then they would come to pass. And so I knew someone was listening to me, you know, to make sure to show me that you're not alone. And, you know, earlier in your prayer before we started the podcast, you mentioned, you know, God adopting us into his family. And that was something, being a kid in foster care, that I had to really study and grab a hold of, because I always had this sense of feeling out of place, or like I didn't have a family, like I didn't belong, or like I was just so different and I had no connection. But I realized that I was adopted into the greatest family of all, and it was God's family. And so that was something I just had to grab hold of and hold in my heart. And so even when I have, you know, weak moments or moments where I'm discouraged, I really have to just recount and, you know, think on the things that God has done for me, realizing that he's the same. He's the same yesterday, today, forevermore. He's not going to change. He's constant. He's faithful. He's going to be there to the end of my life, to the end of time. And realizing that what he did for me before, there's nothing that he can't continue to do in my life. And so really, it's a choice to continue to believe. It's a choice to continue to have faith. Even in the midst of this pandemic, you know, my anxiety is high, my emotions are high, and I'm just, you know, fear tries to set in. And this week alone, I had at least two emotional breakdowns where I just cried for hours. But then, you know, my husband, thank God for him, he kind of snapped me back into reality. He's like, you know who you serve, you know who you belong to, you know who's in control. And I had to just awaken in myself and say, you know what, you're right. I don't have to live in fear or anxiety because I know that God is in control of my life. And whatever he has for me is for me. And the pandemic can't take it away. The world can't take it away. It's what he has for me. And so I'm trying to, you know, hold on to that and be renewed in my mind every day. So every day it's a struggle, especially when you look and you see all the loss and you see all the things that are happening in our community. And it's easy to get blinded by what you see. And that's kind of an oxymoron. I want to get blinded by what you see. But realizing that all of our help, it really does come from God and that he's in control. So, you know, I'm holding on to that every day. And it's proven. Every time I just trust God, he always comes out for me. And so this is no different.
So I love that. I love your perspective. Choosing to believe God, choosing to believe his word, and applying it to your life. And I know for every believer, it's that daily application of God's word, right? That daily sanctification.
Absolutely.
So I love that. So now you are a very accomplished woman with your education. You're a social worker. You have your degree in human services counseling and marriage and family counseling. Mm-hmm. Clearly you have a heart to help others. So tell us what your work is now. What do you do?
Proudly work for Vanderheiden. It's a sanctuary certified human services agency here in Rensselaer County. The main office is in Wineskill, and we have offices throughout the county and even some of our other neighboring counties. And our organization, it serves children, it serves families and adults that have a range of different connections to the system. So, you know, adults with disabilities through our OPWDD system, the Office of Persons with Developmental Disabilities. It serves families, you know, that are in need. You know, we have children in our day programs that, you know, they couldn't work in the natural school setting because they needed some extra support. So we have them on our school on campus, and then we serve youth that are in foster care as well. And so one of our foster care programs is a supervised independent living program. And that's the program that I oversee, one of the programs I oversee. I also supervise family peer advocates as well as youth peer advocates, which are, you know, individuals that have lived experience in the system. So parents of children in the system, as well as children in the system that have gone on and built that resiliency, and now they're able to peer up with other youth in the system and help them navigate and, you know, build those skills that they need to continue to be successful in life. And so it's definitely aligning with my purpose in life. Before that, I did work in child protective services, and it got to be so overwhelming, as you can imagine. And so I remember saying to myself, I wish I could just, you know, work for an independent living program, something like what I went through. And, you know, I just went online, I applied, and I ended up going to interview for a different position. And while I was there, the person that interviewed me was like, well, we have an independent living program. I was just like, see, God, you just be looking out. And so it wasn't even posted yet. And so, you know, I definitely believe that that's a part of my purpose. And in that program, you know, I'm working with youth that are in foster care that don't have any other permanency option. You know, there are different permanency options that a youth in care can have. They can have the goal of returning back to their parent for reunification. Or, you know, they can have a goal of adoption where they're not going to go back to their own parent, whether the rights were terminated or the parent gave up their rights. Or they can have a independent living goal, or APLA, which is alternative, you know, planned living arrangement. So, you know, these young people have that independent living goal. There are no other resources. They're at that transition age. And we know just statistically that youth in foster care, you know, once they're older than a certain age, the likelihood of them being able to get adopted is so hard. That's why we need people like you who are listening, especially for that transition age youth. You know, they're older. A lot of people want to adopt babies or younger children because there's that sense of being able to, you know, just have that direct influence on them from as early as possible. But with our older youth, you know, we have personalities, and this is something I struggle with too, because my younger siblings ended up getting adopted and I never did. And, you know, a lot of that was because of my age. By the time I'm 17, you know, I have my own personality. I have my thoughts. I have my ways. You can't just raise me to be whatever you want, you know? So, you know, it's harder for those youth. And so we have programs now, thankfully, that kids can live in their own apartments. So in our program, they live in their own apartments, and you know, they have a apartment mate. They each have their own bedrooms. They have an apartment mates, and they have supportive staff that are there to teach them the independent living skills, so that they can just transition, you know, after they turn 21 into living on their own. And you know, a big part of what we do is we try to find adult resources that we can connect them to, so that they have someone, you know, beyond foster care, and it's not always easy, but that's definitely one of the goals. We want them to have permanency resources. We want them to have the skills that they need to just live a life that, you know, beats every odd that's stacked against them. And so that's something that's very true to my heart, because I connect with them on so many different levels, being a youth that was in foster care, being independent, having to move on my own, not having someone to move in with for the rest of my life. So, you know, that's something I'm very grateful for. And then, you know, the peer advocacy programs, you know, if I had a youth peer advocate, things could have been so much easier. And so I'm grateful to know that people with that lived experience are finding ways to give back to the community and to the populations that we serve. And, you know, they're really special, because it's not easy to have to tap into your experience or your trauma every day when you go to work. You know, before I worked, you know, with youth in foster care, other jobs that I had, I was able to compartmentalize. I don't have to worry about my lived experience. I can just go be a great professional. But when you have to live it every day, share your story to try to motivate and encourage someone else, or, you know, walk through some of the same systems that you've been through, you know, help a family go through CPS when your family went through CPS, or help a family, you know, get counseling when you're still in counseling yourself and you're dealing with trauma or whatever. And so it really takes special individuals to do that. And so I'm so grateful that I get to be a part of that program too at my job, and, you know, to support those staff. And so, yeah, you know, that's what I do. And it's my purpose. You know, I can't see myself doing anything else other than helping people. You know, no matter how long I stay at Vanderheiden, or if I eventually, you know, move on to do my own thing in a larger scale, and I'm always going to be helping people. That's just where my heart is.
Wow. Well, you are gifted for it. It sounds like you're doing exactly what God has called you to do. Another thing that you have done is you've established Anchor Life LLC, and that is another way that you give back. So tell us about that.
Thank you. So yes, 2 years ago, I started Anchor Life LLC on February 20th, which is special to me because that was my mom's birthday. And, you know, that day always was kind of a negative day, because I always used to, you know, around her birthday or anniversaries of certain events, I would just get a little sad and depressed, because I would think about, you know, not being able to live with my mom and all the bad things that she was. And on that particular day, you know, I was just like, you know what? I am, you know, some of the best parts of her. I'm her legacy. And so I don't have to reflect on the bad things forever. I can turn around and just remember and honor the great things that she was, because she was a giver. She was a lover. She was so connected in her community. She helped people. You know, we always have people. At her funeral, they read in her obituary she had 100-something grandchildren. She doesn't naturally have 100-something grandchildren, but so many people in the community looked to her as a mother figure that they felt that connection to her. And so I realized that, you know, all of those things that are in me in some way are connected to things that were in her. And so I realized that the best parts of me that come from her, I can honor. And so I chose to start my business on that day. And that's just what Anchor Life LLC is. You know, the anchor represents strength and stability. It represents, you know, faith. And so realizing that people have those in them and they just need to be pulled out or anchored in their life. And so really it's a personal and professional development business, helping the person become whole, helping people start their own businesses, start their ministries, and just live out their purpose. And so we do that in various different ways, life coaching and business coaching is one of the main ways. as well as, you know, we do event and conference planning and support for smaller businesses that need that extra help. I love event planning. So it's just, and it's another passion of mine, you know, helping people see their vision come to pass. I love that. You know, even at my job, you know, when I throw little parties, birthday parties, my boss always says to me, you know, this is your thing, you know. So that's just another way I get to use the passion of mine to actually support people who need that level of support. And then through different development strategies, like, you know, business writing, you know, helping businesses do business plans and strategize and things of that nature, and ministries to strategize and, you know, set a plan for moving forward. And so really it's just about helping individuals and, you know, organizations reach their goals for success, realizing that I couldn't have gotten here without help. And so whenever I have any that I can help give some to someone else, that's what I'm going to do.
Oh, I love it. And now through that, you have something that is called Foster Can.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Yes, I love my Foster Can initiative. I love it. I love it. I love it. It really, so if you guys can, if you want to picture the logo, it says Foster Care. And then the R and the E of the care is kind of scratched out, and, you know, an N is over it to turn care into can. And so it really came out of just my lived experience. You know, I realized that even though I had so many positive people, there were negative influences that, you know, said you're going to be like your mom, or the negative parts of her, or you're not going to make it, or you shouldn't make it. And I even had someone tell me that I couldn't go to college because I should try community college first because I was in foster care, you know? And so, you know, it really came out of that, realizing that there's so much negative stigma, not just for youth in foster care, but anyone who's had a disadvantaged, you know, life. There's so much stigma about what you can't do. And there's the label of foster care comes with that stigma. You know, you can't do this. The odds are against you. And, you know, even the statistics, they show it. You know, only like 4% go to college, but 2% graduate. You know, these are really low numbers. And so what the Foster Can initiative does is it takes away the negative stigma of disadvantage, you know, and it replaces every can't with a can. It really is a mission to empower and to encourage people, letting them know that your can rise above every can in your life every single time. And so it doesn't matter what label you have, whether it's a foster care label, whether it's a poverty label, whether it's a label of not having a high school diploma or the education that you want, whatever label it is, you can rise above the stigma and the hurdles that are in your way. You can just jump over the hurdle and you can move forward to have the life that you want. And so really it's an honor and a tribute to the strength of people in foster care that have gone on to do so many grateful things. I mean, successful things, but it's also an honor to anyone, no matter whether you're in foster care or not, that has gone on to just rise above every challenge in their life. And it's a way to just empower other people, letting them know that you can do it. I'm here because that can in me rose above every obstacle. And so I just want to share that with the world.
I love it. And you certainly are, your light shines. You prove that you can, and you're just such a testimony of living out all God created you to be. So you're such an inspiration. So, and I know our listeners are going to be inspired by your message. And I wish I could talk to you all day long, because you're energizing me with your passion.
Oh, thank you.
But we have to wrap up. So as we do, Carrie, what is on your heart that you want to be sure our listeners hear today?
Right. So I want to say to our listeners that you can make a difference, really. Like, you can make a difference, and it doesn't matter on what level, you know, whether you have the capacity to foster children, whether you only have the capacity to donate to agencies that are serving them, or whether you have the capacity to, you know, mentor an older youth that's about to go to college or trying to figure out their path in life, or whether they're trying to get a job. Whatever it is that you can do, it will make a difference in somebody's life. It's no contribution to the system is too small. And I don't just mean financial contribution. I mean acts of service, acts of love, acts of kindness. No contribution is too small. I would not be here if it wasn't for all of the adults that found some way to invest in me. Not every teacher could take me home and and let me live with them forever. You know, not every person, you know, could buy me lunch one day, you know, but the things that they did sow, the seeds that they did sow into me, they bear fruit, you know, and they help me to become the person I am. So whatever way you can serve youth that are currently in care and getting ready to age out of care, please, please find it in your heart and do that. Like I said earlier, a big part of my success was being able to stay connected to my church family and to have that continuity of faith. And so many kids in foster care are hopeless. They're faithless. They don't just need a home that's going to provide for them, you know, meals. They need someone that's going to show them faith and live that out before them so that it can help them to grow and build that faith within themselves. So, you know, please get involved in whatever way you can, especially during this month of foster care awareness. Just, you know, tap into the gratefulness that you have, you know, all of the opportunities that you have, the privileges that you have, and find a way to give back, because these are our next generations. You know, one day we're all going to pass away, but the youth that are in the system now and the ones that are going to come after that and the ones that are coming after that, these are the future generations, and we can change the way culture and society looks by raising people that have values, that have honor, that has the self-efficacy because someone cared for them. Spread that love, spread that hope, spread that faith.
And everybody can do something. We are all called to care. We are all called to do something. We need to find our something, walk it out in obedience, invest in today's youth.
Yes, absolutely.
So I know our listeners are going to be so inspired and want to hear more from you, Carrie. So how can they learn more and contact you? You have a website?
Yes, I do. My personal website, I have two. I have carrierelf.com. That's Carrie, C-A-R-R-I-E. My last name, R-E-L-F.com. That's more of my bio and things of that nature. And then I have my Anchor Life website, which is www.anchorlifellc.com. And on that website, you can find some of the different services that we offer, as well as we have a shop. And so if you've connected with the Foster Can Initiative, we have some Foster Can branded t-shirts and cell phone cases and things of that nature. And if you just want to walk around and demonstrate your resilience in that way, please feel free to go on the website on our shop and purchase one or two or three or five.
Well, we're going to make sure we include links to your websites in the show notes for this podcast for episode number 225 on the related blog post on our website, so people can very easily find you, learn more, contact you through your Anchor Life LLC ministry business, and just all that you're doing, which is just
incredible. And if you're local to the community, like I said, my husband and I, we pastor Primerville Ministries in Troy, New York. And so we also are on social media. Our website is raymervilleministries.org. And so please, you know, get connected in any way. And, you know, we'd love to just share with you.
Well, we'll include a link to the church website as well. So that way folks can, and church is Rhema Revealed Ministries, Troy, New York is where you're located. Mm-hmm. You live in Rensselaer Counties. You're right here in upstate in the capital region. So I'm so thrilled, and I'm excited, Carrie, because I want us to do more things together, because
absolutely.
And what we do, I know we're going to talk a little care portal at one point. So I'm just so honored to have you on the show as a guest. Thank you for all that you're doing to empower foster youth and others. Thank you for sharing your story today.
Thank you for having me. I'm so grateful we finally got the opportunity to do this, and the timing was just perfect. It couldn't have been more perfect.
Well, you know, we know God does that, right? He works that out. So we also want to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in today. I hope you were inspired. I know I am. Drop us a line. We want to hear from you. Send us an email or leave a comment at justicefororphansny.org. Let us know what you would like to hear on this show, what topics interest you, what guests you might want us to interview. I am your host, Sandra Flack. Stay tuned to this podcast and our website and social media for news and updates about the release of my book, Orphans No More, A Journey
yes.
to the Father. Yes, we're almost there. Almost. I'm in the final stages of rewrites with my writing.
I can't wait.
It's a painstaking process because I'm not, you know, I'm not an author. Well, I will be an author, but I wasn't starting out that way. I just have a story that God gave me to share. So I've been trying to faithfully do that, and we're getting close to the end, and the book will be released soon. So stay tuned for that. And if you enjoyed this show, please leave us a review and share it on your social media, share it with your friends. You can find and follow more episodes of Orphans No More on your favorite podcast platform and also right on our website at justicefororphansny.org. Thank you again for listening, and we look forward to being with you next time here on Orphans No More.
Thank you for listening to Orphans No More, for sharing what you've heard and praying for vulnerable children everywhere. We hope you are inspired to walk out James 1:27 in whatever way God calls you. For more information, visit justicefororphansny.org.